views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show. I'm your host, Debbie Pokornik, and my mission is to help you create a life you love at work, at home, and at play. This month, we are continuing with a reading of my book, Break Free of Parenting Pressures. Today, we're starting partway through chapter 8. So if you're just tuning in and you are someone who prefers to read a book in order, or you find that it's missing some context, what you're hearing today, you might want to head back to the beginning of June 2019, or even just to last week where I started part 3 and start listening from there. Whatever you decide, I'm confident you will enjoy the show. And if it doesn't feel applicable in your life, I hope you'll return in the fall when I'll likely switch back to my regular format of interviews and other timely material. So without further ado, break free of parenting pressures. Embrace your natural guidance. Chapter 8, Packing with Care. Strategies that build. Human beings are social creatures who are strongly influenced by their relationships with others. When it comes to guiding our kids towards acceptable behavior, we have much greater influence when they like us as people. As a result, it is worth it to focus on building a connection with our kids far more than for just the obvious reasons. Four powerful building tools that, when used regularly, can have a huge influence on the quality of our relationships are what I'm going to talk about next. The more these building strategies are put into practice in our lives, the greater the amount of respect in our relationships. The greater the amount of respect in our relationships, the more our family will want to work with us instead of against us. Spending time with our children. The first and perhaps most obvious way to build connection with our kids is to spend time with them. Recognizing that many of our days come with a long to-do list and not a lot of time, I'm not talking about dedicating huge amounts of time to playing or chatting together, although obviously this would be helpful to forming connections. I've also included a building relationship chart in one of the previous episodes where I read about relationships, as well as I've done this on other podcasts. So lots of information about how you can build relationship. Instead, I'm talking about looking for little opportunities to acknowledge what our kids are doing, show interest in a positive way, share affection, and then continue on with our tasks. When kids are little, parents will often sneak past their happily playing child to finish the laundry or whatever else they have to get done. Their concern is the child will never let them go if discovered, and there's just so much to do. While this might be true sometimes, most kids are better able to deal with our needs when we take a moment to connect with them and then are upfront about what we must do next. For example, "Wow, look at the town you've set up with your cars. It looks like a fun place to drive. What's this over here?" After a minute or two, "Okay, I have to go and start supper. I'll come back in a bit to see what else you've done." If our child fusses and asks us to stay, we can be friendly yet firm. "I enjoy watching you play and would love to stay longer. Right now, I have to make supper. I'll come back and check on you soon." The more we practice these kinds of interactions, the more our kids see that we are interested and available, yet still have tasks of our own. As our kids mature, these moments might change to a quick shoulder massage while doing homework, a short conversation about the day, or an acknowledgement about something new that we've noticed. Hey, is that a new song you're singing, or game you're playing, or shoes you're wearing? I don't recognize it. Using deliberate and effective feedback. Another strategy that builds both our relationship and our child's sense of self-worth is to clearly tell them when they have done something that we like. Using effective feedback builds self-esteem and provides information they can file away for future use. This is less about praise like good job or way to go, and more about describing what they did that we liked. For example, I love the way you two played so quietly while I was napping. That was very considerate. Another example might be, thanks for feeding the cat. It makes my morning easier when you help with the chores. It feels good to have our efforts noticed, and it's helpful to know exactly what we did that is being noticed. Once our child is aware of a certain positive behavior, a simple wink, note, or hug might be all that's required to show we notice and appreciate what he has done. For example, winking at him when he feeds the cat for the third day in a row. Recognizing our mistakes and apologizing when we are wrong. We build respect and connection in a relationship if we are able to recognize when we are in the wrong and take full responsibility for it. This means if we lose our control, overreact, break a promise, forget something important, or make a mistake, we acknowledge what we have done and apologize for our behavior. Many people have been taught that apologies from an adult to a child are at best unnecessary and at worst undesirable. This is interesting, since a forced apology seems to be the most common tool in every adult's parenting pack. You tell Timmy you're sorry you hurt his feelings right now, and you mean it. When we apologize to our children, we benefit in many ways. First, our relationship strengthens as our child recognizes we are taking responsibility for our actions and are truly sorry. Respect and trust grow out of this. Second, we are role modeling a behavior we want our kids to learn. Third, an apology from a parent reinforces the idea that while it might not always seem true, parents are in fact human and do make mistakes. In our children's eyes, this is important information for them to understand. We do not know everything, and we are willing to admit it. Finally, our apology provides us with an opportunity to model what a good apology looks like. It contains no buts, excuses, or minimizing of our behavior, just an apology, like, I'm sorry, I was wrong, or I'm sorry, I should never have yelled at you that way. Or, I'm so sorry, I hope you will let me make this up to you. Recognize that an apology does not include demanding forgiveness. All we can give is the apology and hope that in time, the other person will choose to forgive us. Thankfully, kids seem to recognize the personal benefits of forgiveness and tend to forgive quite easily. Giving our kids the benefit of the doubt. Instead of judging our children's actions and getting angry, we do better to become investigators and try to understand why our child acted the way she did. Everything that happens around us is filtered through our own system before it is given meaning. When we see, hear, smell, taste, or touch something, we use the data available and how it makes us feel to decide how to react. The problem is we are reacting based on our understanding of the situation, not on reality. If instead we could really try to understand the other person's point of view, we have a much greater chance of getting a clear picture. This helps us avoid misunderstandings, builds respect, and teaches patience. People always have a reason for what they have done, and at the moment of choosing, that reason seemed like a good one. Try to make it a habit to give your child the benefit of the doubt and try to figure out why she did what she did. Put on your investigator's hat and provide her with an opportunity to explain. This does not mean demanding, "Why did you do that?" but calmly asking, "Can you help me understand why you were kicking the cat?" Or, "What did you mean when you said you're running away forever?" Remember, a good investigator keeps an open mind and does not allow emotions to interfere with the facts. Curiosity is the only emotion you need to do this. Using building tools such as these helps create an environment in which families want to work together. If we are building a house, we'd spend a fair amount of time ensuring our foundation was sturdy and long-lasting. Let's make sure our family foundation holds up for generations to come. Free parenting tip: the relationships we build in our families determine how effective our parenting strategies will be. We can begin building strong family foundations by spending time together, providing effective feedback, apologizing when we are wrong, and giving our kids the benefit of the doubt. Free tool analysis. The strategies we use with our children can be divided into two broad categories. The first group is the building tools, which are meant to create a strong, mutually respectful relationship so that our kids want to work with us and be part of our team. The second is the fixing tools, geared towards changing behaviors or helping our child fix a mistake she has made. There are many strategies available to us, some that are extremely effective and others that really are not. To assist with recognizing a good fixing tool, I like to use the acronym FREE. If the strategy we are using is F, functional, R, respectful, E, effective, and E, easy, I'm definitely going to keep it around. Functional. The tool we are using should teach our child something relevant to his error. If our tool does not allow us to link the consequence to the mistake, learning will be minimal. A good link example might be that when the child rides his bike without a helmet, his bike is put away for 2 days. Respectful. If we want our kids to be respectful to others and us, we must be sure to model this behavior. If our tool attacks our child personally, it will cause resentment or lowered self-esteem. When we deal with the mistake instead of his character, he learns more. Telling him in a matter-of-fact voice that his bike is going away will do more than reminding him that he's always forgetting things. Effective. Discipline is done to modify our children's behavior. Our best fixing strategies should result in improved behavior from our kids. So, for example, our child wears his bike helmet without a fuss as a result of 2 days without his bike. Easy. Parenting is tough enough without our discipline tools adding extra work. If a strategy is too difficult for us to be consistent and follow through with, then it's hurting more than helping. Disciplining our kids should be more work for them than for us. Our main job is to provide consistent follow-through, so make sure the tool is easy for you to enforce. In the bike example, our only job is to ensure the bike is put away for 2 days. If necessary, a simple lock can do that job. Exercise: what are you packing? In the book, I've included an exercise to help you think about what's in your parenting pack by guiding you through a process of past and present self-analysis. I will include this exercise on the blog for this show on my website at vibrantpowerfulmoms.com, so you can get a handout of it there. But basically, it's asking you to think through your parenting pack, to take an inventory, and there's actual questions to help you really get an idea of the kinds of tools that were used on you as you were being raised that will be in your parenting pack, whether you like them or not. And then to help you go through and take a look at those tools as to whether or not they fit with the kind of parent you want to be today. And then finally to recognize whether or not it fits with your style of parenting. Chapter 9, Making Common Strategies Free, My Power Play. When my daughter was young and we were going somewhere that she didn't want to go, she would simply refuse to go. This was a problem when someone in the family needed to be somewhere by a certain time. She was too young to leave at home alone and totally determined not to give in. Through trial and error, I figured out that privilege removal got her attention better than any other tool I had tried, and I tried a lot of tools. In this case, I explained to her that sometimes parents simply need their child to cooperate. If she wouldn't, and it was causing a problem for the rest of the family, I would use my parent power to make it happen. This meant I could and would start removing privileges as soon as she dug in her heels and would continue to do so until she complied. Typically, I would start with whatever was her favorite item at the moment. So that was maybe television, movies, computer, gaming system, and then remove it one day at a time. When I reached 1 week gone for an item, I would switch to the next. So it would sound like, you need to come with us and we need to leave now. You have 10 seconds before I start using my parent power. After I silently counted to 10 in my head, I would say, there goes the computer for tomorrow. After 5 more seconds, Wednesday. After 5 more, Thursday. Finally, okay, that's 1 week of computer. Now we're moving on to TV. The first time, she lost all 4 items for 2 weeks. I admit I was starting to panic before she angrily cooperated. She managed to take a week off that sentence for good behavior, and after that, had only one other testing situation before requiring a simple reminder to gain compliance. In other words, this process quickly taught her that sometimes you have to do things for other people just because, and while you don't have to enjoy it, you do need to comply. My main job was to stay calm, be respectful, be consistent, and follow through with what was removed. When she would ask to use a computer before the end of the removal period, I would respond with something like, I wish you could. 2 more days and you'll have it back thanks to your good behavior. If she started to argue, whine, or otherwise act up, I would ignore her, usually by pretending to read, and she would lose her good behavior advantage for that day. An interesting aside to this, these removals work despite the fact that in a normal week, she only got 1 hour per weekday or 2 for weekends to spend on all 4 of those things combined. It was losing the right to that privilege that made it work, not the amount of time she was losing. I'm happy to say those days are long gone, which is interesting because now she's old enough to be left at home alone. For every action. When our children break a rule, make a mistake, or misbehave, we want them to learn from what they have done. We know that for every action, there is a reaction, and for every effect, there is a cause. It is important our kids learn this as well. This is not about punishing a child to teach him a lesson or make him pay for what he has done. It is more about helping him become aware of the natural fallout from his behavior. It is meant to instill self-discipline and teach the child to do what is right in the future, whether someone is there to enforce it or not. Often, nature will deal out consequences for us, and we don't have to intervene for our kids to learn a lesson. For example, if a child decides not to bring her jacket and it is a cool evening, the natural consequence will be for her to be cold. If we really want this learning to take place, we do not have to do anything, and the cool discomfort our child feels will provide some learning. It might not be enough to teach her to always bring a jacket in the future, but it is providing a better learning experience than any we could supply. Where this falls apart is when we interfere with nature. Perhaps we feel Mother Nature is too cruel and we give the child our jacket, extra sweater, or blanket so that she doesn't need to suffer. Knowing she still needs to learn a lesson for choosing not to bring her coat, we try to straighten her out verbally. "Next time you bring your jacket like Mommy told you, right?" These words send a mixed signal. If you want to be warm next time, you must look after yourself. But in case you forget, I will do it for you. In many cases, nature will do a much better job of teaching little livable lessons than we will. Debating how cold it needs to be to warrant intervention is not an issue here, since if it was very cold with the risk of frostbite or hypothermia, you wouldn't have given her a choice to bring a jacket in the first place. This is about allowing nature to provide consequences when it is possible and safe to do so without rescuing and losing the effective learning. So just some examples of natural consequences. Going to bed hungry after choosing not to eat supper. Being too warm or cold after choosing not to dress properly. Losing a toy after not checking under the hotel bed before leaving. Being bored after choosing not to bring activities somewhere. Being tired after staying up too late at a sleepover. Being thirsty after choosing not to bring water. Now, of course, there are times when nature would deal out consequences, but we are not willing or able to let this happen. For example, letting a child run across the road could naturally mean his getting hit by a car. Since this is an example we can't let happen, we have to figure out a different way to teach our kids. We do this by creating the consequences ourselves. These are called logical consequences, and as such, are meant to be logically thought out and enforced. If they are determined in advance, they are easier for us to put into place and have a greater chance of teaching our child something useful. To use logical consequences successfully, we must ensure they are well thought out and calmly delivered. So here's some examples of logical consequences. The child ignores a safety line and plays too close to the road, so the child comes in for a designated amount of time, which might be 5 minutes or half an hour, whatever makes sense to you and the child. The child refuses to wear sunscreen or protective clothing. The child is allowed to play only in the shaded areas or to stay inside. The child leaves DVDs all over the floor after going through them, so the child's not allowed to watch DVDs for a day. The child points a toy gun at a person, so the gun is taken away for a specified period. Your youth spends evenings on the phone computer instead of doing homework, so the computer or phone is off limits until homework is done for a day or a week or whatever makes sense. The teen comes home after curfew without calling. The teen is required to be home half an hour earlier next time for every 5 minutes he was late this time. I taught my kids that if their behavior needed correcting, I would give them a prearranged warning so that they would know their behavior was not okay and have an opportunity to change it. If they heeded the warning and changed their behavior, all was forgiven. If they ignored the warning, the consequence was put into place with no further discussion. Sometimes when my kids were younger, I would ask them to help me come up with consequences for troublesome behaviors that they were habitually doing. I would explain why I felt those behaviors were not okay and tell them it would be a good idea for us to come up with a consequence to help them break the habit. For example, when my son was a preschooler, he loved to jump on the couch. I was somewhat concerned that the couch springs couldn't take that kind of regular abuse and asked him to help me come up with a consequence. Because he was not yet good at the alphabet and had been trying to learn it, we agreed that he would recite the alphabet every time he forgot and jumped on the couch. Although the couch jumping did not stop immediately, it did decrease dramatically, and my son learned the alphabet. He did not feel like he was being punished, which was important because I did not feel couch jumping required a major correction. If I had felt couch jumping was a safety issue, for example, if it was a really high couch or had a coffee table in front of it, there would have been an immediate corrective strategy put in place. As a parenting tool, consequences work well if we allow ourselves to be creative and focus on the learning that is taking place. It teaches our children predictability, responsibility, self-discipline, and the idea that for every action, there is a reaction. It helps us practice creativity, consistency, and self-control. With Mother Nature, there is no settling of scores attached to a consequence, just an end result. If we can remember to use nature as our role model for creation and delivery of consequences, it is a tool worth having in our parenting pack. Free parenting tip: natural and logical consequences help our children learn right from wrong. To use them effectively, we must be able to stay calm, be creative, and allow Mother Nature to take her course. Key points to remember when using consequences are the following. When possible, allow nature to decide the consequence without your interference. Be consistent, calm, and quick to put pre-planned logical consequences into place. Be sure the consequence fits the crime as closely as possible. It is the certainty, not the severity, that makes a consequence effective. Mother Nature does not drop the temperature 30 degrees more because a child refused to bring a jacket. This is about learning, not about teaching a lesson. If your child does not seem upset by the consequence, that's okay. This process is not punishment, but rather about guiding your child towards appropriate behavior. A person who makes a mistake and then cheerfully fixes it should be applauded. It is okay to tell your child you will need time to come up with a consequence for an unexpected behavior that requires correction. Consequences should not be given out when you are angry. If your child is pushing your buttons, take time to regain your self-control before acting. Avoid threatening your child with a consequence when you already have one in place. For example, if your child has been told she'll have to go inside if she goes past the garden, take her inside as soon as she crosses that line. Telling her that she must come back or she'll have to go inside is putting the consequence out as a threat and weakening it at the same time. Whenever possible, provide your child with an opportunity to try again later. If you've taken away a toy gun because your son pointed it at his baby sister, give it back to him after the allotted time and remind him of the rules of use. If he does it again, take the gun away for a much longer period of time. When possible, provide planned warnings to give your child a chance to practice self-control. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and let us know what you loved. Visit vibrantpowerfulmoms.com to find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant Powerful Moms.